Welcome, Legionaries, to episode 44 of LegionCast, a new hobby roundtable. I am your host, Work, and joining me as usual is my co-host, Brandon.
From Iron Cometh Strength, welcome to LegionCast.
And my brother, Maniple.
Greetings, Longbeards. Thanks for having me back again. This week's grudge is against all your old models you haven't played in 10 years and need to let go.
And our other co-host, Paul.
Back for another one. Should be a good one.
Right on. We got a couple of interesting subjects to handle on this hobby roundtable. We're going to be talking some hobby news. We've got a Fulgrim's Quest about organizing your hobby space and keeping it put together. And we've got another Voxcast with talking about a subject that was brought up in our last Voxcast. And then we've got a Pyreside Chat where we talk about making army lists for each other, which is a fun little exercise that Brandon came up with and I thought was kind of cool. So before we get into all that, what have you guys been working on?
Well, first off, Maniple, the models that I have that are 10 years old and I no longer play with, unfortunately, nobody else wants those either, so I can't get rid of them. The struggle is real, and it's out there. I have been working on some Emperor's Children. I finished up some Dreadnoughts that I was working on, and I moved into my least favorite part of this project, which is troops. So I've been working on some tactical marines.
Yeah, I'm still plugging away at my new hobby space. This week I got my armies all in one place and looked at the sheer number of boxes I have with old armies. And a lot of them consist of the Firstborn Marines. And those are things I would like to get rid of. But there just isn't any market for Firstborn, especially ones that are only half painted. And then I'm also looking at a lot of my Warhammer armies, where Warhammer is coming back, I think, in a big way. And so I think I could liquidate a few of my old Warhammer sets to make some money for current hobby projects. So that's what I'm looking at
when
now.
When you say Warhammer, you mean the Old World?
Old World, correct.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like it's taking off around here.
Mm-hmm. I think people are excited about the old square base stuff, and the armies look good. I think their presentation of the models has been good. Not crazy about the price point for the rule book, but I guess that's to be expected. I did get a game of 40K in last week and had a pretty good time with that. It just reflected on how unbelievably simple it is compared to 30K. It was almost like playing a kid's game, that all of the rules now are on the cards for your units. You just lay them out in front. You don't even really need a codex. And so and the rules are very stripped down. The game played quickly. We had a good time. But I still think when you want to play a real, you know, hard strategy game, 30K is the only place to be.
For me, I haven't really been working on a whole lot of anything model-wise. Just been working a lot. We had like four people all left at the same time. So I've been getting my OT in. I did get all the jet bikes built, but that's about it.
Fair enough.
Did I hear you guys have a game coming up soon?
Oh, yeah. Me and Brandon are going to meet up tomorrow, try to get in a game, get the jet bikes their inaugural run to see how they do.
Well, speaking of inaugural runs, I had my first game with Night Lords a couple hours ago, so I got to get my Night Lords out finally. In addition to that, I painted my first test model. I painted a Leviathan Dreadnought. I like doing the bigger models for a test piece. I don't know why, that's just what I lean into, and I had a ton of fun painting my Leviathan. I think it turned out awesome. I need to work on my freehand lightning a little bit, but other than that, I think the whole thing came together great. My first game was a loss by only a few points, but I did have a ton of fun with it. It was the Shatterstrike scenario where you got to reach your opponent's board side, and I was playing against Word Bearers, and he just swamped me, and I could not break through to get in his deployment zone. So he got, like, two denial units in my zone and beat me. And then, speaking of old models you can't use anymore, I'm pretty bitter about this. Not even that I play AOS. It's just that Games Workshop announced last week that they are shelving, at like, almost half of the Stormcast Eternals line, which is what most of my army is in there. So specifically they're shelving the Sacrosanct Storm Chamber, which is most of my army. And they're just like, we're not going to be handling this in this edition. They're being shelved. Tough shit. So here I am with, even if I wanted to get back into AOS, I am not going to drop any more money into a hobby that just shelves half of my army. That being said, I am no longer going to bother rebasing my Beastmen, and they'll just be my fantasy army should I ever decide to plunge into that. Which I did see some fellas at my hobby shop playing today. So, you know, Brandon, you mentioned it was taken off down there a little bit. I think it's getting some traction around here. So good for the old world guys. Maniple, I hope you have a good time maybe getting an army ready for that. And that's kind of my hobby news.
Gosh, man, it seems like I might have to figure out some square base action here, but I don't even know. I don't even want to think about the cost of getting into a new army right now.
Well, if you tell me a faction you're interested in, I could probably send you something to get started with. So
Skaven.
Oh, yeah. I'll probably have some Skaven stuff I could send you.
Yes, yes. I would take that off you.
All right.
I shouldn't, but I will.
I was going to say, were Beastmen included on the list of old world factions that's getting updated? Because I know they're only doing a limited roster. They're not vampire counts are not getting updated.
I'll have to go back and double check. I know that Age of Sigmar Beastmen are being shelved. And then I think they said something in their article about, don't worry, they're coming to Old World Fantasy. So that's kind of what I'm hopeful for.
Yeah, I think they're one of the like legacy books, quote unquote, for Old World right now. But since they're being entirely shelved in Age of Sigmar, I got to imagine that they would do a full line. And that kind of draws back to, I think a lot of this draws back to this competition that they have between the specialist studio and the main studio that seems to be going on. And it just doesn't seem healthy as a company to be competing against yourself at that level. But what do I know? I'm not the one running a $1 billion miniatures company. I'm just a dude complaining on the internet. So
yeah, I got to wonder if there is a market for the kind of the round base, large scale game like Age of Sigmar and a big square base rank and flank game like Warhammer. Are there enough people interested in both styles of play? I don't know.
I don't think they're going for the same people. I think they're going for a lot of the people I've been seeing who are getting into Old World are also Heresy players. So I think they're going for that kind of older wargamer who's not as into the competitive scene because, I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't, both Age of Sigmar and 40K, they really seem like they are dead focused on this competitive, like when you play, you're playing to go to a tournament or getting ready for a tournament. You're not naming your characters. You're not writing a 15-page story about your army tramping through the old world or the galaxy. That's just not the type of player that they're going for with those mainline games anymore.
Yeah, I feel like the separate rule sets have really cultivated different fan bases or customer bases even.
Yeah, and that's why I don't think this competition with itself is healthy because they're two different sets of players. There's plenty of market for both, I think.
Yeah, indeed. I think that, and players who play Warhammer of any stripe usually play more than one system. Yeah, that's been the case for a long time.
Anyway, should we talk about some new announcements that have come out?
Yeah, a couple of new models got announced. We've got another Sons of Horus model, Little Horus, and the Command Squad upgrade kit. What do you guys think of that? I thought the Command kit was kind of 50-50 for me, and then I think the Little Horus model is awesome. So, Paul, why don't you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, finally, a Sons of Horus model, just what we needed. But this one's actually a cool one. I mean, I know I've on the podcast mentioned several times that I've been wondering where the Mournival is, and we finally got a member number 3. We've got Axemand, and he looks pretty cool. He's got some type of, I'm assuming, like a Paragon blade or some sort of named weapon, and a like almost boarding shield. Somewhere between that and a combat shield looking thing. I know people have been memeing the fact that he has the exact same pose as Viren from Siege of Chthonia. And I definitely see it, but the actual model itself is fairly different. Just the pose happens to be the same. I thought it was pretty cool that they include the helmetless face that has the line where Hibukan like cuts off his face and he stitches it back on. So that was pretty neat.
Yeah, I was definitely pretty impressed with the model itself. I like his helmet. I like his sword. I think his shield is really cool. The kind of similar poses don't really bother me. I mean, there's only so many ways that a human can be articulated, kind of, and you know, we're going to have some overlap there, I think.
Yeah, I'm actually going to talk about that a little bit in my Voxcaster episode in which models we like and don't like, because, yeah, I mean, how do you get a different stance out of the human form, especially when you want to show a sword and a shield or a sword and a pistol? There are only so many ways to do that, but we'll have a little talk about that later.
I don't know, man. This one feels like they were like, oh, by the way, we need an Axeman model. And the guy who was designing him was like, crap, I'm going to load in something, change it around real fast because I got a deadline to hit.
Yeah, on their 3D modeler, I think they probably just have a certain number of poses ready to go. They just add in a different head, a little bit of decoration, and off you go, new model.
And speaking of swords and shields, the Command Squad upgrade kit comes with a buttload of swords and shields so that you can build your Command Squad, as well as a kick-ass banner for your banner bearer. What did you guys think of this kit?
I was hoping that they'd have a few options for different weapons in there. Maybe a sprue with some axes or chain axes. Just a little variety. The swords are cool, which is where a lot of guys are going to do like a veteran squad. We'll just have a basic power weapon. But an axe or some different variety would have been welcome. We already have access to power fists, I think, through a lot of the basic kits. But there's not much else.
The command squad can only be outfitted with power weapons. So it's power sword, power maul, power axe. And this kit only comes with swords.
Yeah, it kind of falls in line with a lot of the other new kits that they've come out with. There's just this real dearth of options available. I know I was talking with Brandon the other day as I was putting the jet bikes together. Like, they come stock with bolt pistols, and the kit includes zero bolt pistols. You know, it's just, they don't seem to have a whole lot of options available. And considering how they've marketed the Mark VI and the new Mark III kits as being so versatile, right, even with this Command Squad upgrade kit, they're like, yeah, you can use it with any of these models. We're just not going to give you any options to do anything cool with that. So it just seems very strange.
Yeah, and GW's gone through various phases of this. There was a time where they would make rules for a character or a unit that was actually, they didn't make a model for. And they were notorious for this. And so finally they had a letter where they issued to the hobbyists and said, well, we're not going to offer anything in our rule books that we don't have a model for. So they cut way back on the options in the codexes and the army books. And then they started to offer various kits that had tons of options. And many of you probably remember when you first got your 40K commander box, little box that had all the bits and sprues you could ever want. And that was great. And I really thought that was going to be the pathway forward for a lot of their games. Because I cannibalized that little box, that little kit for everything in my army. And I used every bit on that sprue. But then it seems like they've now walked that back. When Finecast happened, they turned all their pewter models into these kind of resin kits where you just had one option. They might throw in a little mini sprue that had a pistol and a hand flamer in it or something. And then now they're kind of back to this only giving the bare minimum, even though with the plastic tooling, they could offer all kinds of stuff. So I'm not sure what's going on there, why they aren't offering a little more, considering they have the technology to offer quite a bit on that sprue.
Well, and I even remember back in the day, they either split options between multiple kits, like you couldn't get a Dreadnought Multimelta unless you bought the Venerable Dreadnought kit. It didn't come in the standard Dreadnought kit. But there was even a lot of stuff back in that time period where it was like, hey, if we don't make this, you can use third party or you can make your own. As long as X amount of percent of the model is GW, it's still legal. But, you know, nowadays it seems they've walked that back too, where it's like, hey, we're not going to give you options. Also, we hate you for using 3D printing, so don't do it. And it's just, I don't know. It's just a weird decision, in my opinion.
But this is exactly the kind of thing that's going to get outcompeted by the 3D market. And we've already talked about this ad nauseum. I only like this kit for the banners because I don't feel like we have access to like a good banner bearer yet, or herald, whatever you want to call it. You could make a really cool one with this kit, but it's probably going to be, what, $30? I'm not super keen on that, and especially since I don't really know anybody that's running regular power swords. And the kicker with the command squad, because I was trying to figure this out, they are set in that bracket of power weapon. Power sword, power axe, power maul. And even if you have like Legion specific war gear that says, you know, so and so can replace their power weapon with Legion specific war gear, these guys can't do it. So you're not Ultramarines, you're not going to be able to take Legatine axes. Night Lords, you're not going to be able to take the Nostromon chain weapons. Dark Angels players aren't going to get their Calibanite war blades. So they're just command squads, I think, are in this really awkward spot. And I was talking to Brandon about this the other day. I would always rather, instead of taking my Praetor with the command squad retinue, I would just stick him with my Conicar Terminators, my Suzerain, or my Terror Squad, or my Night Raptors. And I never have a problem fitting them in a list. So, and, you know, they're not going to fit into that weird spot of, you know, making your Praetor more expensive, thus, you know, the whole points discrepancy there. I don't see command squads being super popular. I know the free banner bearer, the banner bearer that comes with them would be pretty sweet. Other than that.
Okay. I guess I'm going to go on the defense of this kit here. I like it a lot. I think it looks great. I agree. Some of the bits were an odd choice, like giving everybody a combat shield. I don't really see the benefit of combat shields personally, but I like the heads in this box. I think that Mohawk deal is cool. I think some of the poses you can achieve with like the power weapons and stuff, particularly that sword that's sheathed. I think that's pretty cool. I love that there's two banners in it. That's fantastic. And as far as Warwick, what you said, yeah, I do think they get outcompeted by most retinues, but it really depends on what you want to do. If you want your Praetor to be up front being a beat stick, which in my experience you do, yeah, you're probably going to take your Legion-specific retinue. The case that I could see for this, first off, is to chop this up and make Centurions. I think the kit coming with five, being able to be bought with just a sprue of five Marines is a great choice. I think that's awesome. And then you can make a couple Heralds out of this. You could, you know, do something else, make a Legion champion, anything like that. The edge case that I can see where I would take a command squad personally is if you wanted to have your Praetor just kind of sitting in the back, you would give them the command squad with the banner so that they could sit on a back objective and just hold it. And it would be a squad that you would be like, I need to put something serious into that squad because they're all weapon skill 5. And they all have power weapons, so they'll just, if I send a squad of assault marines forward, they'll probably chop it to bits. That's the only real edge case I can personally see. If our listeners out there use command squads, swear by them, great, email us, let us know why you're taking them and what you think of where the game lies there with them that we're missing. The other thing is, I use power swords. Thank you very much. I use a lot of power swords. It's not the optimal choice, but Deathwing, baby.
I'm just seeing something on this, the sprue itself, with the way these arms are designed. They aren't in a really dynamic pose. They're just kind of forward facing and off to the side. And all the hands are separate. So it looks very clearly like this is designed for you. If you have another kit that has like chain swords or axes or something else, you could glue that weapon choice onto these arms. So it looks like they're made for converting, from what I can tell.
Yeah, I think
an unnamed kit.
It's 5 shields, 7 swords, 1 bolt pistol, and a couple other like Ribley bits and helmets. So you get a couple of options to play around with. Oh, the other thing that it kind of his little footnote here is it comes with a unique transfer sheet. It's a little unclear on what's coming on it, but it's supposed to have a a little bit of representation of every legion. Like they show off Iron Warriors transfers being used on one of them, as well as Imperial Fists and Sons of Horus. So apparently if you're playing a specific legion and don't have a transfer sheet, this might be a way to get a couple to do something for your commands.
I thought that was kind of a big thing, is that they painted this. You know, obviously, I love Iron Warriors. We all know that. But the fact that they actually made the choice to paint a non-Legion-specific thing in a Legion that wasn't Sons of Horus or Imperial Fists, I thought that was a very interesting choice.
Yeah, it's about time. They really haven't shown off anything except for Sons of Horus and Fists.
Yeah, I think that this looks great. The Iron Warriors stuff specifically, because we almost never see them basically anywhere right now. So to see them kind of front and center like this is fantastic. So good for them. We ready to dive into our Fulgrim's Quest? Well, in this one, we're going to be talking about our hobby space and how we like to keep them organized, or how we should be keeping them organized. Some of us are a little better at this than others. I don't feel like I'm one of them. I've got several organizers for my paints, but it has not stopped me from overfilling both of them and just rolling all my paints over onto a flat shelf on my desk. So that being said, I kind of messed up when I rearranged my room last time. I went and got a new desk, and I got it's not very deep. It's only like 18 inches, but with my keyboard on one part of it and my paint shelf, I don't really have room for a lot. I've got an L-shaped desk, so like my computer setup takes up part of that, and the other part of it is my painting station. And with such a, you know, shallow setup, I don't actually have a lot of room to do stuff. So what I need to do, I think, Brandon, you've got a organizer on your back wall for some paints. I need to get a wall mount for my paints. So can you talk about how you decided to go about doing that?
Yeah, real simple. Those shelves are nail polish shelves, bought off Amazon for about $15. Works perfect for paints. I don't have enough of them. I also have like a drawer of a plastic drawer set that is full of paint. I have multiple like MDF paint racks that are all of paint. My paint system is basically that of Rain Man, in that it's a system that no one understands except for me. So that is what it is. But yeah, my hobby space is also not that well organized, and it comes down to a lot. Maniple, of your grudge of I've got too much crap. Nobody wants to buy it off my hands, and I can't bring myself to throw it away. So That's just kind of where I'm at. I've been moving a lot more towards magnet storage, which has its ups and downs, its pros and cons. Pro is I think you can fit a lot more models than in a foam case, and a lot more weirdly posed models. The downside is, oh my God, it's expensive. It's incredibly expensive, and you have to make sure that you put a magnet on the bottom of every base of every model that you own. And that takes a long time and also is expensive. So yeah, that's kind of my organization.
Yeah. On the expense side of that, I knew a guy who just would go to thrift stores and buy steel cooking sheets, or like cookie sheets. And he would get the cheapest magnets he could get off Amazon. And then he would just find some sort of a plastic storage box that fit that cookie sheet with his models on it, and every model had one of those. He saved quite a bit of time and money doing it that way. It is not very reliable. If you do have to travel anywhere long distance, it's you're not going to pack that on an airplane, certainly. But for the movement, the stuff he was using it for, it worked out pretty well. I've tried that a little bit, but it's hard to find those good old steel cookie sheets anymore, because people buy them up right away because they're hard to find now. But that is one option. As far as my organization, that's something I'm really working on now. I was lucky when I moved into this current place that there was a really nice desk with a hutch on top of it. And the hutch was just a bunch of little tiny compartments. And those tiny compartments were a good size to fit a color of paint. So I've got all of my paints, like I've got my golds, reds, blues, greens, yellows, all have their own little segment. Now I have to reach in and grab the whole stack of them, pull them out to sort through to find the exact one I want, but at least they're by color. They're all color coded. And then that also had three drawers. So one drawer had my hot glue gun. One had all my files. The middle one had all my, you know, pens and marking tools and razor blades and that sort of stuff. Then typically, as I'm going to be setting this room up, behind me is going to be a large conference room table, because if you ever do anything with terrain, you want to have a big table space to work with, especially if you're cutting MDF or foam core. You want to be able to lay out a big straight edge to get a good cut. You want to have a nice flat workspace to do that. And then I've got another place. There will be another shelf on the side that has a bunch of little like bits organizers. And finding the right bits organizer is important, where I've got a bunch of little pull-out plastic drawers that have bits based on the army set that they came from. So I've got one just for orc arms, I've got one for left arms and one for right arms. And then if you go down the line, all the bits, I've got like Bretonian lances. I've got one for Skaven heads. I've got one for Space Marine backpacks. You know, just go down the line and label everything with a marker so you know what's there, and I can at a glance grab it. And if you're fairly OCD or at least organizational minded, just going through and organizing your bits box is a fun Saturday. And I've done that on more than one occasion. So now I've got, my problem I have now is that I've got three different bits, kind of boxes where the stuff is in. I'm going to scrap all those, buy three or four brand new ones that are all the same that I can mount to the wall to save my desk space. And then I won't have to ever do that again. So, the other thing is I've got all, like Brandon was saying, I've got all of my armies right now are in foam, and I love the foam, but it just takes up a ton of space. And I've got to downsize by getting rid of a few armies and moving some stuff to magnetization to make some space there. But having the right desk and the right work table makes all the difference, guys. So just spend your time and energy to get those two things in place.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing a lot of the same with that. Unlike Manipul, I got out of Firstborn back at the start of 8th edition. As soon as I saw Primaris, I was like, well, Mini Marines are going the way of the dinosaur, best jump ship now, and I definitely haven't regretted that decision. So I haven't had too much of an issue with that stuff. The thing I've been doing is going out and trying to find like really cheap containers so I can avoid having to put a lot of deep storage stuff into foam. Walmart sells these, I think they're like screw organizer, like little trays with a pop-up lid. They look kind of like a tackle box, like fishing tackle box kind of thing. And you get two for $10 and they'll hold like 40 models in between the two of them. So I bought like 10 of those and just put all my old armies in them and just threw them up into a closet. Yeah, the other thing that I'd give a shout out to is IKEA makes these like flat, cheap table desks. They're 2 foot by 4 foot and they have screw-on legs that are detachable. So you buy three of these and you have a modular 6x4 or a 4x4, depending on how you set it up. They're also great for when you're trying to set up a project like an airbrush station or a storage station. You just set up one of the sections of the table and you can put whatever you want on it. And then when you're done with that project, you take it down and you can, you know, set up the next thing. So those tables tend to move around my apartment at random intervals, depending on what projects I'm working on. And, you know, whenever Brandon comes over, I have to scramble to remember where I put the adjustable table legs to get them all together to make a cohesive table. But those have been working out pretty well for me.
I think I was trying to look into IKEA stuff a while back. And because I'm in Iowa, the closest IKEA to me, I think, is in Chicago. And I will chew my own arm off before I have to go there again. So, maybe next time I'm down in Dallas, I'll try to swing through the IKEA there, but I'm not going to the closest one, that's for sure.
Have you tried not living in the middle of nowhere?
It's a peaceful life.
But yeah. Yeah, it's an option. I mean, you can buy stuff similar online. IKEA is just where I went. I think they sell the slabs for like $50 and the legs are like $10-15 a piece. So you end up putting a table together for like $100.
I also want to put a special mention in here to getting a good hobby chair. But the chair you're painting in you're going to be using a lot. The chair I typically use is a really upscale office chair that has a really heavy duty seat and good back support, and it's fully adjustable. So don't skimp on your hobby chair.
There was actually a guy talking about this a while back. He was like a streamer or a gamer. He streamed games or whatever on Twitch, I think. He was talking about stop falling for the gamer chair selling point because they're dog shit. Gamer chairs suck. Buy a ergonomic office chair. It will last longer and it will not mess up your back.
Yeah, I think where Warwick and I got ours from was there's this office supply store that does it's secondhand stuff. A lot of times big offices like doctor's offices or companies, every couple of years they will renew all of their office stuff. So they will take it to these warehouses and sell it for cheap. Or if you have a manufacturer who's got an overstock, they'll sell it for cheap at one of these I don't know how to, it's like an office supply warehouse is kind of what we went to. And Warwick, how many chairs would you say were in that warehouse when we went through it?
Thousands.
Thousands. And we sat in all of them to find the right one.
Actually, the arms on this one are starting to wear out, so I need to look up the model number and see if I can get some replacements for it.
Yeah, I bought new arms supports for mine on Amazon. So
nice. You can get them.
Honestly, too, like companies go out of business all the time, especially if you're in like a larger city area. If you just go online, you can probably find an office that's clearing out just all of their office supply before it even hits the secondhand retailer. Like this chair that I have, this is from my wife when she was teaching. They did a remodel of their school and they got all new chairs. And so they actually said, like, hey, we're just going to dump all the chairs. And so we just, her and I came up there on a weekend and we just grabbed this one.
I feel like we covered a pretty broad swathe of territory here. Talked about organizing your paints, getting a good desk, and getting a good chair. Do you think that puts a pin in our Fulgrim's quest, or is there anything you guys wanted to add?
Final piece I've learned over the years is when you're buying like plastic boxes for storage, buy more than you think you need of all the same type, because the manufacturer changes the design every couple of years or less, and then you're trying to always find that one that matches and stacks nice with your set, and they don't exist anymore. So just buy a whole bunch. They're cheap, fill your space, and then once you fill that, if you fill those boxes up, that's the time to clean stuff out, get rid of things. But buy it all at once. Don't piecemeal it. Save up and do it right.
Yeah, that's some good advice. I have the same problem with my bits boxes. I've got two or three different bits boxes, and none of them fit together. Welcome back, everybody. I hope you had a good break. I know we did. We're going to get into a fireside chat here that Brandon came up with, where basically we at random got assigned a co-host, and we have to make an army list for them. So, Brandon, do you want to give us the rundown on how you came up with this and kind of what you're hoping to accomplish here?
Yeah, well, one of the things I personally just love, I love the list-building aspect of the game. Warwick, you know, I am constantly just shooting you random lists and being like, hey, read this and check it out. But I kind of got a little bit bored of always making my own list for my own stuff, that especially with things that I'm not really running. So I thought, well, you know what? It might be fun. We've all either got what we want out of our armies so far, or, you know, we haven't figured them out and we're doing different things as well. So I thought it might be fun to do this exercise. And for the person building the list, think about an army that you've never played before. Maybe you've played against. And how would you use that to beat yourself? And then for the person receiving the list, maybe an idea that you hadn't thought of before. Or maybe it's just, hey, this person really actually doesn't understand the finer mechanics of my army. And we could just have that debate and take those ideas and use them to maybe club each other like baby seals. Who knows? So why don't we start off with Warwick? Why don't you go first here.
Yeah, so I got assigned Maniple with his Alpha Legion. Maniple, you haven't picked a Loyalist army yet, have you? Right, so I went ahead and made you an Alpha Legion list, and I kind of made you the list that I would make. And by that, I mean I made you an Ultramarines list. So with your Rewards of Treachery, I gave you a 10-man squad of Invictara Scissorine. But before we get into that, I went ahead and went with the Headhunter Leviathan Rite of War, which I kind of struggled to figure that one out. Basically, you have to take... you can take Headhunters as fast attack, which is fine. And then you have to have more fast attack than you have heavy support. That's easy for me. I'm used to taking very little heavy support, especially with my Night Lords, because I only have one slot.
Yeah, and that's where I got into trouble with my list, because I focused on getting like the Kratos, getting the Storm Eagle or the Fire Raptor, and then all that big stuff. So that now locked me into not having the Headhunter. Yeah.
Right. So what I went ahead and did here is I went ahead and took Exodus, because when he works, he does a lot of work. I think he's just a good pick for any Alpha Legion list. I gave you a Praetor in Artificer armor with Hydran Executioner, which I'd have to go back and read that. I think that makes him better in a fight, I believe. I gave him a Paragon Blade and a Boarding Shield so that he has the heavy keyword, because he's going to be rolling around with that Invictara Scissorine squad. Now for your elites, I took an Apothecary Detachment with 5 Apothecaries. One for the Scissorine, one for your 2 tacticals for each tactical squad, and one for each Headhunter squad. Then the Scissorine, I gave you 5 Plasma Pistols and Legatine Axes, and then 5 Bolt Pistols and 5 Thunder Hammers, because that's the configuration I run and I have a lot of luck with. They also have a Land Raider Proteus that they're rolling around in. So you now have a heavy infantry squad that hits like a bus rolling around in a well-armored transport. They're able to kind of fast react to wherever you need them on the board. I find that's a really good strategy. If I don't put them in the Proteus, I tend to put them in a Spartan just for the, you know, for the flare shield. I think that's pretty handy. Then I gave you a 5-man squad of Lernian Terminators, the same configuration that you normally run. It's the Volkite weapons and the conversion beamer, and then they have their power axes. I think if they were able to, because they have line, don't they? I think they can sit on an objective in your deployment zone, hold that down, and with that conversion beamer, they can put in some work. I know you've had some good luck with that.
When actually, the last time I did that, it worked really well, because they could use that beamer to snipe a little bit.
Yes, yeah.
And get some work done in the backfield.
I really like that. And then I gave you 2 20-man tactical squads with chain bayonets, a Vexilla, and the Nuncio Vox. And then your sergeants both have Artificer armor, Melta bombs, and the Power Dagger. So they can still be, I've noticed that those, or I, at least I've had the luck that those tactical squads with chain bayonets and a sergeant with a decent power weapon can put in a lot of work. And then even if you get tied up with a tank or a dreadnought, you've got your melta bomb that can put in a little work for you as well. For your headhunter kill teams, I gave you 10-man squads. 1 in every 10 can take a heavy weapon. So I gave them a multi-melta, and because they're relentless, they can move and fire that. And I also put both those squads in a Rhino with a Hunter Killer, a Dozer Blade, and a Combi Meltagun. So they can get into a spot real quick, shred stuff with their Bane Strike Bolters, and even put the Hurt on a tank or a Dreadnought if they need to. So this isn't really you've got elements in this list, at least from, and a Leviathan Dreadnought. Sorry. I gave you a Leviathan Dreadnought with a Siege Claw, the Cyclonic Melta Lance, the Phosphex Discharger, and the Volkite Calivers. Because I've had excellent, luck with that configuration of Leviathan Dreadnought. He always puts in the work.
And those rhinos, were those the combi meltas or the multi meltas?
Combi meltas.
Gotcha.
The 10-man squads have a multi melta with them. So with this list, you've got elements like the Lernians and the tactical squads that can kind of sit in your deployment zone and shell out a lot of fire. Those tactical squads are also flexible that they can advance and put the hurt on somebody up close if they need to. The headhunters do exactly that. They can get up to an objective quick, shred whatever's there with their bane strikes, hit it really hard with the multi-melta, and, you know, really put in the work. And the Suzerain are kind of all-rounders. They can do everything but shoot. They've got bolt pistols. Well, I guess they've got plasma pistols. So at Ballistic Skill 5 with plasma pistols, you can really hurt a Dreadnought. The bolt pistols, you know, they're not worth much, but the plasma pistols I found to be worth the points. And then that Leviathan Dreadnought can be where he needs to be, dealing with another Dreadnought or a tank if need be. And the Cyclonic Melta Lance is a fantastic weapon. I really recommend it. It's on the expensive end of the Leviathan Dreadnought's ranged weaponry, but it's always worth it. It always puts in the work.
Now, when I've considered making a list like this, but in that fast attack slot, I've wondered, is it worth it to put in the jet bikes in there? Had you thought about that, or are they just not worth it in this kind of a configuration?
I haven't had a chance to use them yet. I've got a bunch for my Night Lords and a Night Lords list I want to run them in. I think for the 310 points I put into these Headhunter kill teams, you could just as easily take a squadron of Sky Hunters, and I would like to see that as well. I just think that the Headhunters were neat, and that's why I built two squads of them. You could easily swap one of those out for, like I said, the jet bikes, and I think that would put in just as much work. Because they've got better range. I think the plasma cannons are like 36 inches, I want to say. And then they can also take multi-meltas and Volkite culverins, which are super nasty. So, yeah, they're just a good squad for a good ranged loadout. And they can also do some work up close, too.
Yeah, and except for the Suzerain, I've got all the bits I could make this list. And I've got that Leviathan sitting on my shelf. I gave you the one with the close combat options, right?
Yes.
So I've got the other one still.
Yep.
And I've got those headhunters on my workbench now. So yeah, that's been lacking, is having enough headhunters to make this list work. But yeah, that looks like, and getting the 220-man tactical squads. Again, when I first got into the game, I was still in the 40K mindset where you often would just take the tactical Marines as attacks. And once I started playing 30K, I realized how good they are, especially in the big units with the chain bayonets. So yeah, that's a good move there. I like that.
Fury of the Legion is such a good rule too. That's where if they stand still, they can shoot another time. So when they're standing still, they're at half range, they can shoot three times, and that is so nasty.
Yeah, looks good. Thanks. What do you guys think?
Well, anything with Suzerains is going to have an okay in my book. I mean, they're just pound for pound fantastic. They're so good. So. I mean, they're going to put the work in for you. It sounds like you got kind of your bases covered there. Yeah, sounds like a good list to me.
Not only that, they're Suzerain that are an extra 2 inches away. You're screwed.
Oh, yeah, so they're even harder to shoot at. So who wants to go next?
I could just follow up, and I got Brandon for mine. I'll admit I cheated a little bit. I got on Reddit and looked at some lists the guys were throwing around. And I found one I liked that was a very much an infantry-based list for Iron Warriors. And it got me into the extra units that are offered on Warhammer Community. What's that list called? The
Exemplary Battle Units and the Legacies.
Yeah. So this guy was running one of the HQs, but I wasn't super impressed with him. So I found this other guy, Narek Dragor. Have you looked at him?
I am not familiar now.
Well, he's got a pretty nice stat line, and when I compared him to just taking a regular Praetor with some of the same similar upgrades, he came in way cheaper. So Narek is only 135 points, but he comes with a Mastercrafted Bolt Pistol, something called a Graviton Gauntlet. He's got the Artificer Armor, Refractor Field, Leadership 9, 5 Initiative, 3 Wounds, 3 Attacks, and... He has two bits of specialist gear called the Cortex Controller. He's got a Cortex Controller and a Cortex Designator. The Cortex Designator means that if he shoots at a unit and hits them, he just has to target a unit, then any automata that are near him get to add a +1 to their hit. Add +1 to the result of the roll if the enemy unit targeted by the attack has already been the target of another friendly model with the same rule. So he does like a call out shot to a unit, and then your automata within 6 inches get a +1 to hit. Then he has this Graviton Gauntlet, which is a power weapon, strength 8, AP 2. It's unwieldy, but it has the Haywire special rule. So we can use that to punch through some armor, tanks, and that sort of stuff. I think it makes it good.
That's now, neat, because it's a power fist that I think he just has to... He doesn't have to roll to penetrate armor, because Haywire just... there's like a table that you roll on for Haywire, I believe.
Right.
So that's neat.
So he can get some work done in close combat as well. And like I said, cheap points value. Now, I didn't do this rule, but he actually became a loyalist later on. He was converted by the Salamanders, and he can be taken in a Salamanders army as a detachment. If he does so, he gets to bring in a unit of veterans with him for free. Well, they don't take up a slot. And then he gets a +1 attack and stubborn if he's within 12 inches of Cassian Dracos reborn. So I didn't use that in this list, but then after getting Narek, I just put in a Centurion Armistos with an autocannon, because if I'm not mistaken, the Iron Warrior special rule gives a +1 strength to their weapons, right?
Yeah, when they shoot at dreadnoughts, automata, or vehicles.
Okay.
Or buildings.
So that that autocannon goes to strength 8, which is nice. But you could give them anything, really. Then just threw in two Contemptors, because Contemptors are always good. One with a plasma cannon, one with a las cannon. And he's got, let's see, he doesn't have the fix-it rule, though. So keep in mind that. I went with a 5-man Dominator unit, and then two of the Iron Circle. And this is where the interesting points value goes in here, because two of those Iron Circle automata are more points, but really all you get is similar shooting, because they come with those shrapnel cannons, and they're just AP6. So I wasn't super impressed with those things. But you get the same number of wounds, but your save is worse. Now, if they can lock shields, their save goes +1, but those Terminators are always getting a 2-up, and the automata only have a 3-up base. And then the automata have to work in sync in order to keep their 4-up invuln. Otherwise, it's a 5-up. What has kind of been your take? And I don't think they're as good in close combat. They've got, like, initiative 3, but all their Hammer of Wrath stuff happens at strength 10, but at initiative 10. But there's no AP on it, and it's just at their basic strength. So I was not impressed with those automata. Like, what's your take on that?
Well, first thing I want to point out here is if you bring Dominators, you actually can't bring Iron Circle.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they have a rule that you can't. If you have Iron Circle, there's no Dominators allowed.
Oh.
So, okay. But yeah, I agree. I think the robots are cool. The problem is with the Iron Circle specifically, I don't think they're very good, and they are kind of expensive as well. Mm-hmm. So, and especially as far as retinues go, when they're sitting there next to Dominators, Dominators are wild, man. Dominators are freaking crazy good. Like, so good, in fact, that I almost feel bad enough not to bring 10. Almost.
Yeah, so in this list, then, I would just wipe out those two Iron Circle guys and just add in more Dominators.
Yeah.
Because they come standard with Thunder Hammers, and they've got two attacks, two wounds, 2-up save, like, and they're relentless or stubborn. I can't remember what they have.
They are relentless and stubborn and have hatred automata.
Right. So a good solid unit. So yeah, I would just probably take those automata out, even though you don't get to use Narek Draeger's Cortex Designator, but he's a really cheap warlord. And I think that saves you points for stuff you want elsewhere anyway. So then in the troops line, we just go for 15 breachers with all the upgrades you'd want. I think I gave them 3 Meltaguns. 10 tactical marines, another 10 tactical marines. I had about 100 points left over, so I gave them each a Rhino with a Combi Melta and a 100-killer missile. So you don't have a ton of armor in this list, but this gives you something that is cheap value that the enemy has to pay attention to, though, because they don't want that multi-melta in their line, or the combi-melta, and they don't want the 100-killer missile killing stuff. So they might waste quite a bit of energy taking out these tanks while the rest of your army is just moving forward. So then, again, very simple list. In your heavy, I just gave you 10 Iron Havocs with Lance Cannons, 10 Tyrants, and a Leviathan with the Cyclonic Melta Lance. So almost all infantry, and I think pretty good value for what you get there. And if you wanted to move things around, maybe you add in, you know, a big tank or some ordnance or something. But with this list, I would probably rework if you were going to go that route.
Yeah, that's that heavy support area there. That's some beef that you gave me as well. I like that a lot. The Iron Havocs are definitely cool. I probably, since we're dropping the Iron Circle, I'd probably throw that Armistice up to a Las Cannon and put them with them just for 11 Las right. Cannon shots.
And the Iron Havocs, they get precision shot 6 up, you know, that's just pretty nice.
Las Cannon Sniper.
Yeah, so now they're, because they're strength 9, they're going to be put some hurt on some characters, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like the list a lot. 10 Dominators with 10 Iron Havocs and 10 Tyrant Siege Terminators. I could definitely see an opponent looking at me and being like, hey, this is too much. So you definitely brought the heat, and I appreciate it.
What do you have in there for line?
The Tactical Marines and I think the Breachers too, right?
Breachers are line. Yeah. Which are love the choice of the Breachers, because it makes me think of Iron Within when they're sitting there and they're moving forward. They set the shield down, fire one shot, move forward, set the shield down, fire one shot. Love the choice of the Breachers.
I really like Breachers. I have a lot of fun with those in my Ultramarines list.
Yeah, and every time I've played against them or with them, I've thought they were great. So I think that's almost an auto include for a lot of my stuff.
Yeah, it's a shame because I found out the arms don't work, but I found these really cool Iron Warriors Breachers shields, and like, one of them is just the Iron Skull on the front. Another one is the entire Unbreakable Litany. It's really cool. And yeah, nice. I should really work with like a 3D modeler to see if I can change the arm out on those.
Cool. So in what list do you think you would put in any automata? Is it something that's worth it, or would you just run Mechanicum if you really wanted to run those guys?
I have a Dark Angels list that I'm putting together that's Brethren of Iron.
Okay.
Automata list. And
don't you get special automaton for Dark Angels?
Yeah, Dark Angels have the Excendio battle automata, which are basically just Men of Iron. They're really strong, but they have a pretty big downside, which is that if they go crazy, they can potentially go crazy, and if they do, there's no way to get them back under control.
That sounds like that's a feast or famine kind of strategy, because I think on paper they look awesome, but on the on that downside, they go nuts. You're kind of screwed.
You get it's called an automata kill switch, which is nice, which is you have a thing that it's a 5-point piece of war gear that anybody with a Cortex controller can take. So, and what it does is you just, instead of making a shooting attack, you just go D6 wounds on that automata, no saves. So you can potentially, like, but then you got to kill off your own 400-point automata. But I think the Iron Warriors also, I think they like the robots as well. I just don't think the Iron Circle, unless you're going specifically for theme, which totally valid to do, I don't think they do it. And they suffer a big problem too, in that I want to bring them with Perturabo, but you can bring like one because of the cap on the amount of Primarch points you can take. So it makes me big sad that I can't bring 6 Iron Circle with Perturabo and the Tormentor in a 3,000-point game. But that is about 2,500 points right there.
Yeah, I think we kind of found with the Primarchs, it's hard to get them into a 3,000-point list that really makes it efficient. seems like they want to be in a much bigger force. And especially Perdurabo, if then you get his retinue, you get a tank, you get the stuff he's good at, man, you're using up well over half your army at that point, right?
Yeah, I think it's easier for the beat stick Primarchs. So like the Lion or I think Conrad Kurz would also be easier to fit into a list. Just the ones that you just want to fire and forget into something.
Right, because I don't... Kurz, it's really hard to find a unit to put him with. He's just kind of going to be doing his own thing. He gives a big buff to the whole army, though. The whole army gets Praesite if you take him. So it's basically you do a terror assault list with him. Everybody gets night vision for free, and you just go ham from there. So he's super easy because you're just taking him by himself no matter what.
Yeah, and then your more support style Primarchs, your Lorgar, your Reboot Gilliman, you guys like that. If you're not, basically you're saying, I'm taking this guy, now we'll build the list, is kind of how I view them. I'm not familiar with Alfarius. I think he's kind of similar in that way. And then Horus, forget about it.
Yeah, good luck with that. That's 600 or 1,000 points.
Can he take Justeran as a retinue?
He can, but again, it's the same problem with...
You'd have Perdurabo to be running like... You'd have to be playing a 10,000 point game to actually do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's 600 points. So you take a baseline squad of 5 Justeran, that puts the Lord of War at 875.
Which means you're over.
Yeah, like way over for 3. You have to play like 4,000 points. Just to take a 5-man retinue with no weapon upgrades. And if you're trying to talk about 1,000-point Horus Ascended, yeah, you're playing an Apocalypse game if he's going to have a retinue.
All right. Well, Maniple, thank you for the list. I quite enjoy that. I'm going to have to start putting together some Tyrant Siege Terminators as well. All right. So I got Paul. And Paul, I don't know the first thing about your loyalist army, so I went with Sons of Horus for you.
Fair.
Now, when I approached this, things that I thought about is, again, you have this method that I'm very jealous of in your games and how you play, and that you start with a list and you just play it and play it and play it and play it and just make small refinements along the way. And you're actually very good at making those refinements. I don't see you drop things that were working good for you hardly ever, and you do drop things that aren't very quickly. So for that reason, since you're focused on the Black Reaving and Justeran for a lot of what you're doing, I decided to go a different route for you. So I made you a Long March list. And in looking at the Long March, I was like, okay, well, this is kind of like the Emperor's Children Maru Skara, in that it's about beating feet across the board as fast as you can with a bunch of infantry. So I made you a list that does that. One of the other things that you do all the time is you always bring Abaddon, so I didn't bring him. I brought what I think is a cool model, Varin Ashuradon. And the reason that I brought him is because he can take a Reaver squad as a retinue, and they gain a line, which I thought was a pretty good deal. So I took Varin Ashuradon as your warlord with a 20-man Reaver squad. That Reaver squad, the Chieftain has Artificer Armor, the Karsoran Power Tabar, which is the big two-handed axe. I think it's breaching 4 up on that one. And some Melt Bombs. And then I gave you Nuncio Vox Vexilla. I know that some people don't believe in taking the war gear on the squads. I always take the war gear on the squads. I've found that I like it better having it than not. So I brought you a Vexilla and a Nuncio. Then 4 more Reavers with Karsoran Power Tabars. So lots of big axes screaming across the board with old Varin himself. So that's your HQ. I did not bring a second Centurion or anything like that. I didn't think you needed it in this list. Maybe I'm wrong. I also found that I ran out of points really fast.
Yeah, Sons of Horus are pointed a little weird, so everything's a bit more points heavy than other legions.
So for troops, I brought 2 20-man Despoiler squads. The Sergeant has Artificer Armor, a Power Fist, and Meltabombs. You've got your War Gear with the Vexilla and the Nuncio Vox. And then four Despoilers with Karsoran Power Axes. Now, I went with the Power Axe here because it's the same cost as bringing a regular Power Axe, but it's not unwieldy. And I think you're going to be sending these guys into troops anyway, where the AP3 is going to be enough. But you have the AP2 if you need it. And then the Power Fist, just for absolutely punchy fisting anything that you could want. So two squads set up the exact same, just like that. Then, because I know you love Just Aaron, I did bring some. Obviously, these guys got to go in outflank because of the long march special rules. But what I did is I brought one with a grenade harness. All of them have thunder hammers. It's just five. So I brought a grenade harness, all thunder hammers, and then a multi-melta. So the way I figured, these guys can walk onto the board, they can multi-melta something, and then if anything wants to charge them back, you're facing down five thunder hammers on five weapon skill, five fearless dudes. Not something that you can just sit around and ignore. All right, next, I brought two tactical squads. They each have rhinos. They each have the war gear. And that's it. It's just two 10-man tactical squads in rhinos. And I figured these guys will be your backline objective grabbers while the rest of the army rushes forward. If there's something you at home that you need to take care of, these are the dudes for it. For elites, I brought you four apothecaries, just base apothecaries to go with all those troops to sit on objectives and stuff like that. Two contemptors with my personal loadout of Gravis Melticannon and Meltagun in the fist. It's simple, it's 195 points, and it gets the job done. And then finally, and this is my personal favorite touch here, a Leviathan Dreadnought with Phosphex Launcher, Volkite Calivers, and Cyclonic Melta Lance. Wait for it, in a Dreadnought drop pod.
Wow, someone's actually going to use one.
And the reason for that is everything in the Long March that has heavy has to start in reserve. And I really wanted this list to have a Leviathan in it. So drop pod it is. I think it's got the beef to be able to handle, depending on where you drop, any kind of interceptor reaction. And dropping a Dreadnought with that loadout into your opponent's deployment zone would be absolutely horrifying.
That's the reason why Orbital Assault got nerfed in 2.0. That was the old meta. Three Leviathans and Dreadnought drop pods dropping in your opponent's deployment zone turn one.
Yeah, well, it seems pretty good to me. But anyway, so that's the list. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, overall, it's actually funny. That almost mirrors one for one the first list I ever made. I think I had less Despoilers and more Reavers because I was doing Black Reaving. But yeah, overall, pretty good. The one thing I would say is you don't take the Phosphex Launcher on the Leviathan with Sons of Horus, because putting dangerous terrain down in front of the unit you're about to charge just fucks your own charge. So you usually just avoid that one. But other than that, yeah, pretty good. I'm interested. I could actually run everything in there. I'll have to use tactical squads for Despoilers, but yeah, we'll have to give that a run and see how that works out.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we're getting a little long in the tooth here, so we'll wrap up with me. I had Warwick. Yeah, so I decided to go with Night Lords, mostly because I actually have the Hereticus book and don't have the Loyalist one. And rather than really like put a list together, I did play around with some, but none really jumped out at me. I had Warwick send me his, and I kind of went over them, and I decided to just sort of see if there was anything that I found that he hadn't been using or any tweaks I could sort of talk about. So one thing, I know me and Warwick were talking on the break there about this, but a fun thing to run is Destroyers. the Bitter Duty guys with rad grenades. It seems like Night Lords have a lot of stuff that buffs strength, but they're all like pretty low AP. And so taking destroyers helps you out a lot because the rad grenades lower toughness by one. So you go from chain glaives, you know, wounding on threes and they get their armor save and kind of bouncing off to chain glaives, wounding on twos and causing instant death against toughness four opponents. So especially with models like Night Raptors, you're going to be able to just throw a load of just tons of attacks with shred, wounding on twos, and everything's just instant deathing. They'll instant death everything up to Terminators unless they're using Biomancy. So it's a good option, something to look at. It is pretty expensive to run destroyer squads in tandem with Raptors, but it is kind of worth it. I noticed you have the 15-man terror squad. To be honest, they didn't really stand out to me as being super impressive because the big things with them is they get bloody murder and fear on like basically what is a veteran squad. They actually cost the same as veterans, but they lose a weapon skill. And just being weapon skill four on a melee unit, just for the price of an elite unit, seems a bit rough. And then the fact that you're having to pay the points for, well, you're going to take rotor cannons every time, means that you're paying like 23 points per dude and their weapon skill four. I actually ran into this when I played Brandon initially. I was running Pride of the Legion and taking these veteran squads with power weapons and like Bane Strike bolters or something. And the unit with a Rhino was like 400 points. And I was just throwing them out there and literally like throwing them against tactical Marines. And I would lose three models to his like four or five. And he'd win on the points exchange just because my guys cost so much that every time one went down, it really hurt. And I just feel like terror squads kind of do that for me. I don't know if that's been your experience, like actually building and playing with them, but...
So the one game, I've only run the one game with them, and the reason you take the rotor cannons is because they outrange bolters, and a 15-man terror squad, I usually take chain blades instead of chain glaives, they're a little cheaper, and they breach on a 6-up. Anyway, that's their loadout. They'll outrange bolters, so they can harass tactical squads. And a 15-man squad with a... I usually run a Tech Marine with them. I did this game. So they're hitting on twos at range now. They have preferred enemy infantry. So they're getting rerolls on their ones. And they're plus one to wound. So your bolters or your rotor cannon spamming shots that are at a plus one to wound so long as they're outnumbering. So long as you're not facing another 16-man squad, you're going to be getting that bonus. In this game, I did, and they put in a ton of work. So I was really happy with them. I was they did end up getting shot to pieces in like the fourth round, and that was it. But I think that there's gas in that tank. They don't look very special on paper, but I did have a lot of fun with them with the terror assault list.
Yeah, my big thing with them is you can take 2 5-man tactical support squads with rotor cannons and rhinos, and it's like less than half the points of 1 10-man terror squad.
Fair enough, but
you don't get the melee potential, but with those extra points, you're buying another Raptor squad anyway.
Right. I think with Bloody Murder and preferred enemy infantry, they kind of make up for that. And they're fun and they're themey, and that's kind of what I was doing with this. But yeah, I think you make a lot of fair points here.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting, so I wanted to hear your take on them, because really just reading the War Scroll did not impress me, but I also don't have any experience with them. The other thing that I funny enough, I'm the Dreadnought guy, but Night Lords almost struck me as being the one army that I didn't really feel compelled to take Dreadnoughts. Actually, in fact, I felt really compelled to take vehicles, which I was very surprised on. The big part of it is their talent for murder requires them to charge stuff that's pinned, falling back, or you outnumber them. And for the rule, vehicles of any kind count as 10 towards outnumbering. So even just like putting your guy, like every unit that can take one, into a Rhino just so you can throw that Rhino into a unit and just go, here's a plus 10 to my side, is like super huge. The other thing is Prey Sight's really good. Everyone talks about night vision, just ignoring the effects of night fighting. And they're like, oh, the range and leadership. But there's a little small addendum to the end of Prey Sight that says, and all your shooting attacks cannot be shrouded against. And it's 15 points for a squad of any kind, no matter the size. You take a squadron of three predators, 15 points, they cannot shroud against you.
That's brutal.
Yeah, it's crazy good.
15 points for an entire Dreadnought Talon.
Yeah.
Derridaeos, Leviathans, Contemptors. It's awesome.
Yeah. So I was looking at things like Saber Squadrons, Predators, where you just 15 points, and it's like, cool, these are going to hit you hard. You can't see me. I can see you. And you can't take any of your, you know, reaction saves against me. And the one thing about Dreadnoughts is they don't count as vehicles, so they don't get the plus 10 to outnumber. They are just one. So that's kind of the reason
why. No, I thought Dreadnoughts counted as 10 as well.
I might have to relook at that. I'm pretty sure because it says specifically vehicle keyword, which the Dreadnoughts don't have that. They have the Dreadnought keyword. So let me pull it up on here. Because I think that was the big thing that I saw a lot of people talking about when I was looking into the lists. Is they're like, you want to run vehicles over Dreadnoughts because of the plus 10. But yeah, well, we'll have to look that up later because this is taking forever to
load. No, I just read it. You're right. I thought Dreadnoughts had a... Because like models with bulky, they count their... That's why
they count squads, for additional...
Night Raptors are good because five Night Raptors is actually 10 Night Raptors in combat.
Yeah. They're actually 15 because they're bulky two. They count as bulky three for the purposes of outnumbering.
Oh, okay.
So you put five Raptors into a squad and you count your side as 15 models.
Oh, that's awesome.
You throw a Rhino in there, you're at 25. And all of a sudden it's like, yep, we get our talent for murder rule. But yeah, so that was the idea, is to just run a lot of... you run some long range stuff with Prey Sight. You run some close range stuff to throw into combat when you need it. I was really looking at, for some reason, sabers really stuck out to me just as a cheap, fast attack slot. And then the other thing was, yeah, stuff like the rotor cannons. I noticed I didn't see any Seeker squads. I'd recommend running them, at least a five-man squad with Nemesis Bolters. I like them better than Recon. They don't have the Shroud Bombs, but you're in night fighting anyway, so you don't really need it. And they're Ballistic Skill 5, so your sniper rifles are hitting on twos, and you're just trying to throw out that pinning.
I never thought about that. That's a good call.
Yeah.
Recon have line, baby.
Yeah, but they're not going to be holding objectives.
That's what you think. With Nemesis Bolters?
they're sniping sergeants out. They're too busy to regular go after MVP. The objectives.
Regular MVP.
But yeah. Yeah, well, especially with Night Lords and the Terror Assault list, I feel like the troops slots are pretty heavily contested between Terror Squads and Raptors and the regular troops.
Well, even though with Terror Assault you can take Raptor or the Night Raptors and Terror Squad as compulsory troops, they don't get line.
Yeah, they don't get line. But
it kind of gives me the big sad.
It's just nice because it frees up your elite slot so you can take other stuff. But yeah, those were kind of my recommendations.
Yeah, I really like a lot of the recommendations you gave me here. You've given me a lot to think about, especially now that I've got a game under my belt. I can stop working in theory and kind of start putting a more solid list together. So that's a lot of really good advice. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, and also, I know we've said this, but you need to get Sevatar. He is amazing.
I know, he's so cool.
But yeah, yep, that was that's what I came up with.
I've got a little addendum to Brandon's list here. I checked the rule on the Dominator cohort. They only get that rule where they can't work with automata if they're taken as a retinue squad for an HQ choice. If they're not taken as a retinue, they can still work along with the automata. So there you go. You could have your two Iron Circle in there if you really wanted them.
All right. I think we've got one last segment to get in here, too. We've got the Voxcast. And Brandon, do you want to lead us on that one?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got an email recently from our friend Wilfred Wilkinson, which we read before. By the way, he emailed us back again, said he was very excited for HibuCon. We are too. But one thing he asked us to talk about is, are there kits that Legion-specific kits that GW made that are really doing it for us, either aesthetics or rules-wise? And are there some that are not? So, yes to both of those is what I'm going to say. And we're going to talk a little bit about which ones we like and which ones we don't. So, I will start off here. One kit that is really doing it for me, particularly in the aesthetics department, is the Dreadwing Interemptors kit. I love the Mark II look. They're bulked out with like the extra like rebreather stuff on the helmets for the rad weapons. Plus, I think the plasma flamers are just such a cool thing. They're also doing it for me in the rules department as well, because as most of the guys on this podcast can attest, five of these dudes in a rhino will walk up and delete 500 points of models while they're packing 150 for that squad. Now, they will die in the return fire, but who cares? So that one of my favorite kits, I would say, both from an aesthetics and a rules side of things. On the other side of the coin, I'm going to talk a little bit about Palantine Blades. From a kit standpoint, I think they look good. They could be better, I think. Only one of them has the big flared shoulder, Fulgrim-esque shoulder pad. I kind of wish all of them did. So, if anything, they're too restrained for me. And from a rules standpoint, here's my big issue with these guys. Why are their dedicated transports a Rhino or a Terminex assault drill? Why? This is an assault unit. There's no assault transport we could put them in? What were we doing?
Yeah, that drives me up the wall too. And this has happened with several units in the game, is that they don't have a dedicated transport that they can take automatically, like despoilers. They don't have an assault transport, they're an assault unit. Why?
Yeah, transports this edition have had a lot of weird stuff. Well, and drop pods too. They were so terrified of orbital assault in 1.0 that they just nerfed them into the ground where they're unusable. I don't think any of the drop pod variants have assault vehicle on them. Even like the $400 one that you get from Forge World.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very weird to me. This is a squad that, like, in all likelihood, this is probably going to be hanging out with your Praetor. You're probably looking at these guys and going, I'm taking either Phoenix Terminators or these, unless you're an absolute mad lad like me and just bring both. But you're not, you can't put them in an assault transport. So if they're either foot slogging it across the board, which sounds like a terrible idea for your infantry weapon skill 5 death wall with no invulnerable save, or you're putting them in a drill or a rhino. Now, the drill, you're going to get intercepted and killed once that shows up, or the rhino is going to get opened up pretty quick as well. So I don't know what the thought was here. They are completely 150% outshined by their legacy cousin, the Palantine Blade Aquilae, who are just the exact same squad with jump packs. So, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, the kit's not horrible. It doesn't excite me as much as I think it should. Especially compared to, like, the Phoenix Terminators. Phoenix Terminators, even though they're pretty old, are beautiful kit, so that's my two picks. Who wants to jump in here?
Yeah, I can take next. Yeah, in terms of models that I like, to be honest, Heresy has been one of the few games where there's very few models I dislike. Everything in the character series, most of the elites have really stood out to me as being good. There is one model that I remember seeing in person and thinking, wow, that looks kind of weird, and it's Warwick's Master of Signals. And, you know, it's not the paint job. You did a great job painting it, but that kit is super old and the model is like half the size of a regular Marine.
He's got little chicken legs.
He's got little chicken legs, and the backpack's got that huge tumor bulb on the back, which is supposed to be like a sensor array, but it just looks funny. I don't know. It just did nothing for me when I saw it. And I was like, it's cool you have it, man.
You are totally right. He's a goofy model. Although, the counterpoint to that is that Master of Signal model comes with the cool champion model. He's got like the downturn. He's pointing his sword down, which is one of my favorites. So, I got the goofy Master of Signal that has some neat stuff to it, but you are right. It is a weird model. It's very dated, but it comes with the awesome champion model. So
yeah, which that champion model does look good. But yeah, that one in particular, I don't know where that came from. I do know that's one of the like oldest of the Heresy kits, because I'm pretty sure that came out like in the first couple of months, along with the Praetor pair. And I think the Apothecaries, although actually I think the Apothecaries, the original ones, might have even been an older kit that was just from Forge World that they repurposed for Heresy. But yeah, I don't know. In terms of ones that I really would like, I mean, the Justarin have always stood out to me. It's kind of why I gravitated towards them. They just really encapsulate everything that the Sons of Horus are supposed to be. The Reavers, too, with all the spikes and stuff coming off them, really embody everything the Legion is supposed to represent. But all the Elites do that really well.
I can hop in next year. I really like, and if I did another Loyalist Legion, I would do these, because I really like how these models look. I would run the Saigren Mazan Rite of War for White Scars. And I would do all Ebon Kishig. So I'd have, because all your infantry model gets Feel No Pain. And it's a really cool theme list that I've had in mind for a long time that I would want to do. But the Ebon Kishig models, the White Scars, Tartaros Terminators, look awesome to me. I really like them. I think they did a really good job with that kit, and it would be a selling point for me if I got into White Scars. That's why I would do it. I like the theme. I like the lore. All that stuff really speaks to me, and that would be a fun army for me to do personally. So that's my positive one. My negative one is going to be the Night Lords, Night Raptors, because it is a very dated set. And you can tell. It's kind of got the same problem as Paul mentioned, the Master of Signal. The proportions aren't quite right. They're all in kind of these weird poses. They're not exactly leaping. Some of them look more like they're drifting, kind of side to side, like they're floating like a balloon. And it doesn't look very dynamic. There's one guy that's got one of his legs like kind of up and bent straight down, and his foot is going straight down like he's a fucking ballerina or something. It looks kind of weird. It looks kind of goofy. It's a little ungainly. And the chain swords and the bolt pistols are more, they look more like kind of 40k-ish than they do 30k-ish. So they don't have the awesome Nostromon chain weapons that you're going to be taking with a squad like this. They've got regular chain swords. No, I'm going to give them the chain blades because they're so much cooler. Or power weapons, which the squad does look like it comes with a couple of power weapons, but that's just not what I'm going to run. I'm going to run the chain blades. So that's kind of my commentary on those. I do think that the Night Raptors, they're aesthetically pleasing. Their poses are not good. That is my only complaint.
I've seen a lot of people online just take the 40k ones and do a head swap.
Well, that's what Brandon did for me for the Christmas gift exchange, and they look great. So, yeah.
Yeah, there are a few kits like that they're decent kits. They just need an update. I know World Eaters have that problem with a lot of their stuff. They still look good. It's just they're starting to show their age compared to the new kits.
Yeah, definitely. Maniple, do you want to jump in?
Yeah. For my favorites, I'd have to go with the Dreadnought upgrade carapace. All you can get now is just the chest plate, but some of those look really great. And if there's something that you've been sleeping on and it's available, I'd say get it now, because those are always going out of stock. And in particular, I think my favorite is probably the Dark Angels one. It just looks so good. It's really, bulky and it's got the wings on the front and it's got a cool helmet. But I would be happy with have any of those in my collection. I was really happy I got the Awful Legion one for my Contemptor and really like how it looks. On the other side of that, the Exodus model itself, I kind of love it and hate it. His stance isn't that bad. He's kind of got one foot up on a rock and he's, you know, scoping at a target. He's loading his rifle. But the more you look at it, it's one of those that the worse it gets. Like the breech does not line up with the barrel. And the gun is made by somebody who's probably never, I wonder if they've ever seen a gun in real life or used one. He's loading it from the top, but he's also got a magazine in it. I'm like, well, okay, is it a bolt action? Is it magazine fed? Like what's going on here? And then if I was going to make this guy, if you have a guy like a sniper, I'm kind of thinking of the guys who do a lot of the World War II dioramas. I don't know how I would work that into a diorama. I'd almost wish that he was leaning over a wall, lining up a shot. That'd be so much cooler. Or if he's got his cloak billowing up behind him as he's running for his blind or something like that. Just standing there, it kind of leads into the question that I started with at the very beginning of our hobby cast was, how do you make a good pose? And we talked about these guys from the Sons of Horus, where you've got two in the almost the exact same pose. Are there limitations on it? And you see how sometimes the artists will go and try to make something really unique and different, but it doesn't always work out. I'm thinking right now of the Clade Adamas assassin. He's the one who's kind of running forward with his hand up, ready to draw a sword, looking backwards, shooting his bolt pistol behind him. And it's an action shot, but for me, it just doesn't work. I haven't seen the model in person. It just seems like they might have flown a little close to the sun, too close to the sun on that one. You guys know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, that one. It's always funny to see people put that model on the table because they don't know which way to face it. Because it's, do you face it with the gun pointing at the enemy as if he's running back towards your deployment zone, or do you turn him around and have him running towards you like he's going to come for the sword, but then he's shooting his own guys?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and certainly we've come a long way from the old pewter minis where the guys always had their two hands up in the air because they had to be flat cast and one's a pistol shooting up and one's holding a sword like this. I mean, certainly the models are so much better now, aesthetically pleasing, but now you've got to also be thinking, well, how am I actually going to make this look cool? And that's always an aesthetics question.
Manipul, I pulled up the assassins to look at that Adamas assassin that you were just talking about, and I happened to see the Vindicare assassin on there, and we're talking about Exodus, and he's leaning up like he's about to look past a wall, and I'm like, that's great. Like, that's exactly what you want out of your sniper.
His bolt-action rifle doesn't have a fire selector.
Yeah, right.
That, oh man, I remember so many memes about that. And all I could think of is that is a person who has never seen a gun.
Yeah, so will I buy it or will I just keep going with the guy I converted out of a... What were the snipers before the Seeker squad? I think I got a Seeker. It looks decent enough, so I think it's probably what I'm going to go with. But yeah, that Vindicare model is a great example. The rifle looks good. He's ready. He's taking cover behind this, ready to turn around and take a shot. Yeah.
Yeah. The assassins in general have always been pretty good. Even like the Kaluxus assassin, they incorporate a lot of stuff on the base. So he's like standing sort of at like a 45 degree angle, like he's surfing off some debris with his arms outstretched. They've always done pretty well. It does seem like the Legions don't get a lot of that treatment just because Space Marines are so awkwardly bulky with huge shoulders. And they're on flat bases, so it's kind of weird. That's why tactical rocks became a thing as a way to try to introduce some sort of elevation for their feet. But yeah, it's always made posing them a little weird.
Yeah, and I'm depressed to see. I never ordered my Clade Vanis Infocyte, and now they're out of stock. So I'll have to wait till she comes back.
They're never coming back. Do you know how long the Night Lords themed dice were out of stock? Well, I was trying to get them.
Well, 3 years.
For months. And now they're gone. They're gone forever. Mm. I never got them.
All right. Well, I hope we answered that question pretty well. Guys, I think we're getting a little long in the tooth here. Should we think about wrapping up?
Yeah. Thanks for having me. And remember your grudges. There's always a chance to make more, though. See you later, guys.
Yeah, always good to be back on for another one. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Thanks for stopping by, everybody. And if you listen this far, please give us a rating and a comment and share this podcast out to your buddies. Look us up on social media. We are LegionCast, a Horse Heresy podcast on Twitter or X. And we are LegionCast18@gmail.com if you'd like to shoot us an email. Also, I'd like to shout out our buddy Lockie from Zorpazorp, who got featured on Warhammer Community a while back for his Imperial Palace build. Be sure to go check out his YouTube channel, Zorpazorp, and see what he's been doing there. It's an awesome video.
Thanks for stopping by, everybody. And remember, from honor cometh iron.